Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 133 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another They Don't Do That in Europe, TDD-TIE, with Scott Diedbach and David Palin. We're talking about the two most recent World Cups. That would be Namur and then also Zolder. We talk a little bit about the race that just happened today, which was Azincross. And then on top of that, we sort of dive back into Nationals a little bit, U.S. Cyclocross Nationals. And then if you saw the article I had, the commentary I had on the selection process for the U23 women, which became a bit of a controversy on CXRs.com, sort of fleshed out both of those, some of the points that I think needed a little clarification. And, you know, after 4,000 words, there was enough words on the page, but I tried to sort out a couple more thoughts on that topic as well. So that's in this show too. This show is brought to you by MapleWorks Coaching. MapleWorks Coaching. So there, if you went on to Google and searched for coaching for cycling, you're going to get, I'm going to guess, 4.5 million hits, because everybody thinks they're a coach, and the choices are immense, and fighting through that, you almost need a coach to choose your coach. Like, you need to hire somebody to fight through all of the Cat 5 coach wannabes to get to the people who really can help you. I'm your guy. I'm your coaching coach. And what I'm telling you is MapleWorks Coaching is the type of group that you want behind you. They're not going to give you just a cookie cutter system that's going to just work on getting you fit. You basically, I know all of you, you're awesome, you're dedicated. You guys can figure that out pretty much on your own. Or if not, you can like buy a plan and be fit like that. They will do that, and they're going to do that, but also they're going to watch your progress. They're going to adjust things as you go to meet goals that you want. If your goal is to like improve in cyclocross or finish a century or just make it through your 4-hour ride without feeling like crap, these are all things that they can help you with. And how they're going to do that is give you the tools to be able to meet your goals. They're not just going to say, here's your workouts, go do them, go record all your stuff. Let me see your heart rate. Let me see your watts. And then, you know, we'll talk again in 2 months. This is a more personalized coaching approach. It deals with your head too, the psychological part of coaching, especially with racing. That's something that I think that gets left out, where people can go from Cat 5 to Cat 4 to Cat 3. And then all of a sudden, it's just not on being fast. You have to know how to win a race. You know, have to know how to psychologically prepare for a race. You have to worry about nutrition. This is where MapleWorks Coaching is your secret weapon. What they want to do for you is they're going to offer you a 30-minute free consultation. So everything that I just said there for the last 3 minutes, you can check it out to make sure it's true. Plus, you can sort of pump them for info and get off onto a start. Take advantage of this. This is like a free consult, free coaching session on the phone. And then you know, at the end of that, you can sign up with them. But you don't have to. That's the deal. But I think you'll want to. So definitely take advantage of this. Go to MapleWorksCoaching.com/pod. That's P-O-D. MapleWorksCoaching.com/pod. There'll be a link in the show notes, so go there as well. All right. As always, we are also brought to you by the fine folks. We're all the fine folks at Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, or just the Wide Angle Podium Network. We don't even need to have the podcast in there anymore because we're expanding. We've already moved into video. We've picked up the videos I make under Cyclocross Television. They are all part of the network. Now we're going to try to expand that into other realms as well. Really want to break out into not just podcasts, but into articles, written articles, into video, into anything that we can do to interact with you to make your content easier to get and more fulfilling, and just build this community. And that's really what it's all about. We're trying to build this Wide Angle Podium community. We added the Gravel Lot, which is that's what they're all about. They want all of the tribes out there, and they want them all in one place. And we got that place for you, and it's Wide Angle Podium Network. So check them out. They actually had a really good, I just listened to their last show with Infinity Nutrition. Really, really, really fun stuff in there. Slow Ride Podcast. I don't miss an episode of that one as well. It's you're not gonna learn anything new from them, but it's entertaining the whole time, and they have wild predictions and they play cool games, and you should definitely check them out. If you do want to learn something, go to Bike Shop CX, because they're always teaching you stuff like how my egg beaters are the best pedals out there. That's what I learned from Bike Shop CX, and maybe you got something else from that show, but you know, check it out and see. Consummate Athlete, just information upon information upon information. Always a good check-in, you know, between training and just life tips and everything else. They're talking to people from rock climbers to ultra runners to everything. So all of the shows on the network are quality. We want you to be part of it. Go to wideanglepodium.com, become a member, sign up, $5 a month, up from there. Hey, $50 a month, we'll take it. It's going to go to help us stay on the air. And that's the main goal here. Let's do the show. Scott Dienbach's going to start us out. This is TDDTIE. It's episode 133. And it's coming into your ears right now.
Are we ready, Bill?
Yes.
Well, you're already recording. Should I just start? I should just start.
Yes.
Hey, welcome back for another edition of TDDTIE. They don't do that in Europe. With us in the center, Mr. David Palin.
Hey, how is everyone doing out there?
I should say Mr. David Palin and Katarina Nash. And floating above our heads, like the god that he is, Bill Shaken. Bill, what's up, man?
Hey, guys.
Like the god that he is.
I thought he would like that, so there you go.
You guys, thought I wait, you thought I'd like that? Like that's it?
No, I didn't. I guess in hindsight, no, I don't know. I don't think you would like that.
I mean, it is in the guidelines that I sent out for being a part of the podcast.
You got to call Bill a god.
It's in the technical document. Did you read the technical document?
I mean, there are some strikes against you for some of the prior episodes.
For not calling you a god. Anyways, guys, it's been a little while since we've done a TDDTIE, so we're getting caught up. We got a couple World Cups to talk about real quick. We're recording this on the Friday of, what was the race today? Azincross, right?
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about Jingle Cross. World Cups.
Jingle Cross. And so we're going to cover that. We're going to do results for that. And we got a bunch of other little stuff we're going to throw in there along the way. So does that sound, you guys ready to start? Or does anybody have anything they want to say?
I want to give a shout out to Esther Boreski and Eduard Michael Grosu.
Okay.
Those are your Romanian national champions.
Nice. And when was that? When was that determined?
December 22nd.
Wow, nice. They're early on the...
Yeah, I wonder how that happened. In Cebu, Romania, I wonder if they got a force majeure exception.
Them in the U.S., right?
Yeah, and Canada.
And Canada, of course,
and New
yes,
Zealand yeah. and Australia.
So it's a rule, except for these 18 countries.
Wait a second. Hang on a second.
Yes.
The Czechs already? Oh, no, the Czechs just had the... Wow, the Czech Republic had their junior race.
As a separate event?
Separate race. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, we should think about doing that in the U.S. Maybe have one day with just the elites and one day just the juniors.
I think that's plausible.
Yeah.
We just need to find somebody to pay for it.
Yeah. maybe someone will write the checks.
Oh, ba-doom boom. See, that's why we have Mr. David.
We're here all week.
He brings the jokes. So, all right. So, guys, let's talk about a little bit about Namur, the Namur World Cup that was, you know, around the Christmas period. You mentioned there's a race that was 5 days ago, and there's already six races that are in between that one and the one, you know, of today. So, but let's think back to that. That is the that was the race. It was very soupy, muddy. The Namur Citadel course, of course, you know, that we're all so familiar with. Namur has that grooved off camber that we see all the time. That's always a point of interest in every race every year. But let's give results. We're just going to do elite men and elite women, starting with the elite women. In first place was Lucinda Brand. Second place, Mariana Voss. Third place, Anne-Marie Verst. Fourth place, Nikki Bramier. Fifth place, back with us, Yolanda Neff. So at the top three, all Dutch, a Dutch sweep of the sharp podium. So what do you guys think of that?
The Dutch showing their prominence in the Women's World Cup. But it's also another example of how strong the women's field is in general. I mean, just to throw some other names out there, Denise Betsema, Eva Lechner, as you said, Scotty D, Yolanda Neff was in fifth place. Any of those women could be winning any of these races all the way through. It makes for really exciting races week to week. Maude Kapteyns was way down in 15th place. Sana Kant in 13th. This is really showing the strength of women's racing on the World Cup scene today.
I believe Yolanda Neff was like fifth row start and then finished fifth overall. So that's wow. That's amazing. So, all right, anything else?
Yeah, well, ahead, Yolanda, you know, racing for Trek Factory Racing now stepping in as the understudy for Evie Richards, who unfortunately announced yesterday that her cyclocross season is done. She needs knee surgery.
I think she was
training, hyperextended it, and then just it was just not getting better and had to, yeah. So
there was actually two women that pulled out, right? Her and the Belgian young rider that rides for Marlix. I can't think of her name right now. Verdanchat.
Mm.
Verdanchat. Same thing, also a knee problem. I don't know any specifics, but... Yeah, two really good women racers that aren't going to be at Worlds, so that's too bad. So, anyways,
I think
go ahead.
No, it's just Eva Lechner, you know, and somebody who I think we sort of wrote off a little bit, wasn't getting the results that she had in previous years. Switches teams, comes back, and has had some good results. Now, you know, top 10 for her, sixth place. Denise Betsema, who we've seen at the top, another Dutch woman who could be up there. The one thing I do want to mention about Sanne Kant, who came in 13th, and we'll talk about Zolder as well, is that she gave word today that she's done with the World Cup. Not going to race the French World
the
Cup.
The final
done,
two.
Yeah, done with her World Cup season and just going to kind of I compared it to the Wout van Aert strategy, you know, that she can't catch Mariana Voss at this point and win the World Cup, so she's gonna I think concentrate and try to win another world championship instead.
Yeah, because then, I mean, obviously the French World Cup would be a little bit of travel. Not terrible, but still a decent amount of travel.
We know how much she likes to travel.
Right. So, yeah, this like you said, she can't catch Voss. This allows her to stay home, train, and or go someplace warm and train. I don't know if she's going to still do Deveve and other stuff, but anyways, stay concentrate on that train and then go to Worlds. So, yeah, it makes sense for sure. Top Americans in this race, number 8 was Katie Keough, top American finisher. That's pretty cool. Also down the list in number 17th place was Ellen Noble. Who else do we have? In 31st place was Katie Compton.
If we go North American, we got Magali Rochette in 20th.
Oh, yep. Sorry, I'm just.
Emily Warner was down in 74th.
Ellie Anderson, 47.
Ellie Anderson was 47. And Corey Coogan-Sissek in 68. Jen Malik, 73. And Emily Werner in 74.
So and there we go. Becca Farringer, really nasty crash in this one.
Yeah, she got a DNF, but had a bad crash.
Really scraped up pretty bad. And I think, did she end up racing? Oh, yeah, she did. But I think she was still shaken up from this one when she took the start for Zolder.
Yeah, she raced Zolder and today, right?
Yes.
Yes, I think she was up there today. So top 20 today, I believe. So, but we'll talk about that in a second. So, all right, well, that's the Americans and North Americans, I should say, for the Namur World Cup. Overall, it was a really good race, I thought. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Lucinda Brand other than saying she was on the podium. Crushing performance by Lucinda Brand. I mean, she wins by almost 30 seconds on Mariana Voss. I mean, she just said, you know, she felt really good. She had really good legs and felt really good. And she, I tell you what, man, when she puts the power down, it's just, she just is amazing. You know, she can just ride away from people. So she brings a lot of that road speed.
We saw, you know, the race David and I watched today, Azen Cross, you know, you saw that on display. That was basically a road race. It was a crit. I mean, you should go back and look at those, Scott. more bunch sprints with big bunches than I've ever seen in cyclocross races, but we'll get to that. But I think the interesting thing is you take a course like Namur, which is a pretty nasty sort of classic cyclocross race, you know, one of the monuments of cyclocross. It's one that we've seen in the past when Mariana Voss was coming back later in the year, that I think she actually started in here, and this was one of her head-to-heads with Compton, where Compton beat her by being able to ride the classic off-camber section. And Voss wasn't. Right. Now Voss is, you know, raced all season, is just like flying. But you get really, you know, I would say if you think about these racers as all arounders, but you know, you're looking at Brand, who won Omloop, is a seasoned road racer, and Voss really made her mark on the road. So two roadies really just, and that's not a pejorative. I mean, that's just sort of their primary strength, just going at it on one of the hardest courses in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And put Nikki Brimeyer in that category as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you could. Sure. I think so.
She's having a great comeback season, too.
She is at the front of every single race. Have you noticed that? She's not getting a lot of wins and a ton of podiums, but she is at the front in the mix at every single race. It's really cool to see. One of the things I want to mention, this was a really muddy race at Namur, but it was not like the Louisville mud. We had a special edition of Bike Shop CX yesterday that I put out. I talked to those three guys, Tyler Cloutier, Jen Malik, and Alex Morton, and they all said, like, I think Tyler said he pitted one time at Namur, and little Alex said he didn't pit at all because it was a soupy mud. It wasn't like the Louisville mud where it was real thick and sticky. This was soupy and kind of your tires just could clear themselves and you could just keep riding. So a little bit different there.
Would it have been different if there was 10 other races on the track?
It might have been, although it was actively raining during both the women's and the men's race from what I could see, so I don't know that would have mattered, to be honest. So there we go. The other thing, that famous grooved off camber, did you guys, well, I know Bill, you said you didn't see that part, but it looked like, you know, normally there's several lines, at least two lines that you can ride or that you're kick pushing, you know, through that.
I would say three distinct lines usually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But this year there was really only one. I mean, everybody except maybe Nikki Brammier, she was riding the low line, but everyone else was riding down that center line. Pretty consistent. I mean, there was occasions where someone would pop up and then pop back down and stuff like that. But the vast majority of people were simply riding in a line straight down the center one. So that was kind of an unusual thing to see. And it really took away from the usual excitement of that part of the course, I thought.
Yeah, it's always... Go ahead, Dave.
I was really interested to hear, Scotty D, on the cast that you just put up, that bonus cast. as you asked each of the riders what their impression was of that, and they, to a person, they all talked about it being a lot longer than we see it as we watch it on the live longer, feed.
Yeah, the length of it is longer in real life than it looks like on the feed. So, yeah, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was just going to say it reminds me, in the past, it's always reminded me of, like, a video game where you want to stay on that top and then you sort of get knocked down to the middle and then some people get knocked down all the way to the bottom, which is the hardest one, you know.
It's like Donkey Kong.
Yeah, and it was even, that is, I think, one of the, possibly the last time, and he was probably, like, 17 or 18 when it happened, but I just remember Vanderpool getting knocked down to that bottom one and like running into the same stake like two laps or three laps in a row, and finally you could see it was the time where we were talking about when him and Wout were always like one and two, and that was sort of the knock on Vanderpool was once he gets rattled, he just, his mind gets out of it. Yeah. And that was kind of the big example, you know? So it's sort of sad if that those routes don't exist anymore.
Yeah. I hope if that's the case, I hope they do something to fix that. Cause that's always one of the most interesting parts of that course. So. All right, let's go on. We got to do the men's results for the same race, Dylan Nemour, first place. Matthew Vanderpool, second place, Wout Van Aert, third place, Tone Aert, fourth place, Joris Nieuwenhuis, fifth place, Michael Vanthernout, and yeah, that's it. I don't need to do sixth place. So again, Matthew Vanderpool wins by over a minute, basically rides away from the field, and that's what that was. Any comments or anything about that?
Yeah, that's about all the excitement in it. It's really great, though, to see Joris Nieuwenhuis with... He's been really showing his face up at the front end of these races now.
Yes, I was sad that he missed the podium, but I think he makes up for it in Zolder, is going to get third in Zolder. So, yeah, that's a good point. I was going to mention that, David, is that to see him up there was kind of cool. Oops, sorry, my mic just fell
That boom of yours, you got to work on that boom.
I know. I got this big, heavy mic. In 41st place was Stephen Hyde. In 47th place was Kerry Werner. 48th was Cody Kaiser. In 55th place was Max Judelson. Is it Judelson or Judelson? I can't remember. And in 63rd place...
Those Dutch names are hard to perform.
Tyler Cloutier.
And in 44th place, we're going to take credit for him, the Canadian, Michael Vandenham. He had a great race. He had a great
race.
That
was pretty good, yeah.
Yep. Finishing on the lead lap, I believe. Oh, no, he got pulled with one to go, I think.
Okay, yeah. I think you're right.
A couple things just looking at this. Maybe David, you're keeping the... Keeping hope alive, but Lars Vanderhaar just kind of stuck in that 10 to 15th, you know.
And what is the deal with that, man?
Yeah, so
he's putting too much time in developing the rest of the lines.
Maybe
he's dragging them all along just too much. I don't know. You're right. I still keep hope alive. I do.
Big jump in that race. Name we haven't really heard in a couple. Maybe a season or so. I think he had a breakout season a couple years ago. Marcel Meissen, German, top 10. So good to see him back. And then also, you know, and I know sometimes I feel like Lauren Swick has these injuries that we don't hear about. So maybe that's happening now, but I just feel like he's a guy who probably not having the season he wanted. And then also right behind him, Johnny Vermeersch is a guy who I think is almost taking this North American approach to cyclocross, in that he had a stellar beginning of the season and seems to be
dropping
back as it gets toward the end. And you know, old man Powell's just consistently right there.
12th place. Yes. So it was a pretty typical men's race overall as to what we've seen this season. And that is what it is. I think we're going to see some more of that before the end of the season. Don't you guys think?
I think so.
All right. Well, anything else we want to talk about in Namur to wrap up, wrap that up?
Did you want to give the men's U23?
Some go ahead. If you got, do you got it right there? Yeah, definitely.
Fifth place from France, Eddie Fine? Fine? F-I-N-E?
Fine?
And then in fourth, another Frenchman, Antoine Benoist.
I think welcome, it's Benoit.
Welcome to
ahead.
My world.
I don't think it is Ben. It's B-E-N-O-I-S-T.
Benoist. Benoist. Yeah.
Come on, smart guy.
You got it. You got it.
Come on,
you
David.
It.
What do you got?
Benoit, isn't it?
All right.
I don't know.
I'll go to an easy one in third place, Ellie Easerbeat.
Easy.
Yeah. There we go.
Jacob Dorjoni. In second place, and then winning it, Thomas Pidcock, old TP.
Yeah.
Taking home the win. That kid can ride bikes fast. Ninth place was Ben Turner, another British guy. Mentionable here, Gage Hecht, 11th place.
11th place, yeah.
And nice. The one thing that Adam from Alpha Bikes was saying about that, if you look at the results for Gage, he's came in at 48-41 and he's right there, another 30 seconds and he's up there, seventh, eighth place. I think even Zolder, it's closer, but definitely right in the range that he needs to be and moving up.
I think Gage is going to give us another thrill at Worlds, like he did a few years ago, and he's going to be there at Worlds. I think he's going to be right there in the mix and make it an incredibly exciting U23 race. And that, so I think it's going to come, are we going to see basically Pidcock, Easerbeat, Gage will be in there somewhere all the way to Worlds. Is that what you're predicting, Bill, too?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And then did you already mention Alex Morton getting ninth
place
in the juniors?
Oh, I forgot. Yes. Yeah. A top 10 for Alex Morton. That was great. He talks about that a little bit on that show. Just like felt great, came out. And it was here's another interesting thing that Alex says on that show that people might be interested. If you are, go listen to the special edition Bike Shop CX that came out yesterday. He said Louisville, the mud of Louisville and the difficulty level of Louisville actually gave him a lot of confidence over in Europe. Because he said Namur was actually not as difficult physically, right, as far as the watts you had to put out to get around the course as Louisville was. So, he had this, after doing Louisville, he did, pre-riding Namur, he was like, wow, this seems a little bit easy after I just, he went straight from Louisville straight over to Namur. So he said he had this little confidence kick, after pushing himself around that Louisville course for U.S. Nationals, and that really helped him. So there you go.
The National Championship jersey will do that for you.
I asked him that, too. I was like, doesn't the putting on that Stars and Bars, over in Europe for the first time add some watts to your legs? And he said, yes, definitely.
I'm just going to say it now before we get the letters. Scott meant to say Stars and Stripes.
I meant to say Stars and Stripes. I'm sorry. I said Stars and Bars. Oh, God. Thank you, Bill. For
too much of your Civil War history.
I know. I was actually just reading Civil War stuff, so there you go. All right. Let's move. Is that all we want to mention?
First place in that race, in that junior race, Ryan Cortens, Ben Tullett. Another GB guy getting second. Witsa Mason in third. David Toniati in fourth. And Jan Zituk. Oh, I'm sorry, Jan. Like you're listening. Zatlukal. Zatlukal.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. Now you can move on.
All right, let's move over to...
Wout got sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wout Vervoot.
Okay. All right. Moving over to Zolder. We go from the mud of Namur to a frozen, looked like a very frozen course in Zolder. There was some softening as the sun hit the course in later races, the earlier races, much more frozen. A lot of people riding file treads, they said. So that was all that's all pretty interesting. Huge change. Probably going to add to the, you know, the road racers. Lucinda Brand, Mariana Voss going to do well. So looking at the elite women's podium, first place was Mariana Voss. Second place, Lucinda Brand. Third place, Sonia Kant. Fourth place, I'm going to say, I'm going to call her Kaylin because Ant McCrossin, that's how what he says on the feed. Kaylin Alvarado. And in fifth place, Maud Captains. Mariana Voss has to stop for what seemed like an eternity to it was too bad because she stopped right behind a tree. Did you notice that, David? On the feed? Yeah, when she pulled over and stopped to fix her whatever was wrong with her bike, she was like, just bad luck. She's like right behind a tree and the camera couldn't see exactly what she's doing. It looked like she was resetting her chain or something like that. But it seemed like it took forever.
I think she was resetting the limit screws or something, yeah. Because it wasn't just to throw the chain back on kind of thing. And she went from mid-front group to 11th or 12th place.
Yeah, she dropped way back.
So here's the point. Here's the point. I know what you're going to say, and that's all true. But she then skips the pit.
Yes.
I was really surprised by that. I thought when you have any troubles with your bike, that you have to bend over it and put it back together. Just swap
anything
it
that
out.
Forces you to stop and fix. Right. You'd think you'd like come in the pit and, you know, get something that you're a little more confident in. But she just stays out and continues to crush it. Rides down every person and wins by a second over Lucinda Brand. So that was just amazing. I thought Voss had the ride of the day with a very close second from Anne-Marie Verst, in the women's race, for everybody that watched it, you know, we got that 180-degree right in Zolder, right? They come down that long, fast start. They do that 180 right, and as that goes back on itself, it kind of curves a little bit to the left, and there was a crash right there that pushed a lot of the women way back in the field. Yolanda Neff got pushed way back. Anne-Marie Verst got pushed way back. So a lot of people a lot farther back than you would normally expect them. Anne-Marie Verst then just starts knocking people down, passing them one at a time, works away all the way through the field and finishes ninth. So impressive ride by her for sure, I think. Her and Voss both, just incredible rides.
Yeah, Katie Compton was actually doing really well for a bit and then had breathing
specifically
issues.
Did you see Compton start, David?
Yes.
That was one of maybe the best start I've ever seen Katie Compton have. She was first to the finish line, Bill.
Nice. That's a long finish line, too.
Yes. I was like, holy crap, Katie just beat the field to the finish line. So that was, I was shocked.
Which kept her clean in that 180 that you were just referring to. Because in the last few years, she's been caught in that inevitable mess that happens at that 180. Yep. She was having a great race. She was with the lead group or in the chase group for a while, made it up to the lead group, and then had some breathing issues, according to what Mark Legg is telling us, and then just couldn't do it.
Yeah, it just kind of looked like she slowly just was running out of steam, breathing or whatever, and just, I mean, she was still fighting, riding hard the whole time, but just didn't quite have the kick in the legs that some of the other ladies had that she was racing against. So Katie Compton gets 13th as the top U.S. rider. 16th was Ellen Noble. 17th was Katie Keough. Magalie Rochette, since Bill mentioned her before, was in 30th place.
But not first Canadian.
Yes. Go tell us who that is.
Jen Jackson.
Jen Jackson, a couple places ahead of her. Courtney McFadden in 43rd place, Rebecca Ferringer 51st place, Sonny Gilbert 52nd place, and Ellie Anderson 56th place. I believe that rounds out the U.S. Jen Malik in 77th place. So there you go. All right. Well, I thought that was a really good race, David. I don't know about you. When I was watching it, I thought, man, this is, again, really exciting. Watching them ride through the field and trying to catch everybody at the end was just great. So as always, just another stellar women's race. Oh, and of course, on the classic, you know, stage of Zolder, that's what we've That's what we're accustomed to seeing. So again, and that great, you know, where you do that double switchback Exolder where you can choose the high or low line, you know, that's always an exciting thing to watch. We saw different lines being taken there.
And it wasn't as definitive in this year's race because it was drier.
Yes, I agree. It was more frozen, harder, and it seemed like both lines were about the same, and so it didn't really, there wasn't as much separation from that element as we usually see. I totally agree with you. So, all right, Bill, any comments you want to make on the Zolder women's?
Yeah, just because I know that they're splitting them out, and unfortunately UCI doesn't do it on their results, but just to mention, if we can sort of make up the top U23 women, I believe it would have been Carmen Alvarado
taking the top. Inga Vanderheiden.
Yep, Inga Vanderheiden, and then I think it was
Floor Nagengast from the Netherlands. Oh no,
yeah. So you wanted to skip the Czech name?
I did. Sorry, I did. Go ahead. Just, so you could say Jana Chechenkarova.
Chechenkarova.
Chechenkarova. Yeah, that sounds great.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't sound good at all. Whatever the opposite of good is, I think that's bad.
I'm trying to boost your confidence, Bill, so you'll do more of that. All right, let's move over to the, was that all you wanted to mention? You all set?
Yeah. Marion Norbay-Riverol. Sorry, French is another language I don't speak at all. She's a name that's coming up more and more now. Seems like the French indeed are pushing out some really strong cyclocross racers.
Yeah, you know, there's always French riders at Worlds that we're like, what? Where'd they come from? They're really strong. Hopefully we'll see more of that for sure. All right, move over to the men's race at Zolder. The big news going in, well, maybe some, one of the big things going into this race was, tell us, Bill, the return of
Zdenek Stibar.
I just wanted you to say the name. Yeah, so that was big coming in. Where was he? He was like eighth row or something crazy like that. The other thing we should mention before about the women's race is both Namur. I believe Namur set the record for largest field in the women's race, and then Zolder immediately broke the record for largest field in the women's race.
That's awesome.
So that is amazing. That's awesome to see huge fields for women's racing, and that's just great, great thing to see. So
yes,
I
was going to say Stibar. You mentioned him historically. I think I had some video at one point of him. It was. Probably two comebacks ago in the cross for him, where he, same thing, he started like 10th row, and we're talking about that long starting stretch for Zolder, you know, where they're working all the way down the racetrack, and I think he was like third going into that 180 at the end of it. It was just, it was one of these like Stibar moments.
Yeah,
it just like blitzed through everything to the front.
Do you get the feeling that he took this comeback? He's a little bit more serious about it. I feel like the last times he's come back, it was kind of like, oh, I'm just going to pop in real quick
always,
and do a race. And,
these are always
but this
the
time
races.
It feels a little bit more serious, though.
Yeah, but it's always this little stretch of races that he does.
True.
Except for the one that he broke his teeth on.
Yeah, that was bad.
I
don't know. We'll see what. We'll see what happens with him come later on.
And then it's always like, you know, and he didn't do it this year, but he'd always be up there and he'd be fighting for podiums. Then he'd just get all the pressure to race Worlds, and then he'd always disappoint us all and not race.
Yeah, and not race Worlds. Well, but Zolder is a good course, you know, for him to come for sure. I mean, that's one he's going to shine, especially on a frozen course. Most of the riders riding file treads, you know, he's going to shine in that. That's the, you know, ideal setup for him, I think. So
yeah. See, and he also the problem is that, one, he's an older, not the same rider he used to be, but the thing that we used to love about Stibar showing up is that we had this more traditional race dynamic where, you know, Sven and Niels and all these guys would get in there and no one would want to really like go off the front. They're all watching each other. And then they'd get to the, you know, the start finish area and they'd all sit up and like Stibar would come in here and he was like, no, we're not playing
hammer
this game.
Down,
and then he was just right. like, you know, had his, he was just hammered out and everybody had to like put their chins onto their stems. And like, you know, they didn't get that time off, which was awesome. He forced them to race. That dynamic has just been destroyed with Vanderpool.
Right, sure.
Because he just does that from the gun and then...
and no one can stay with him, whether their chin's on their stem or not. They just can't stay with him. So. All right, well, let's give the men's results at Zolder. In first place, Matthew Vanderpool. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Joris Nieuwenhuis. There we go. In fourth place, Tone Aerts. Fifth place, Laurens Zwick. That's all of the above. So again, pretty much the typical men's race that we've seen
big news,
over and over again.
Big news in sixth place.
Yes, Quinten Hermans.
Having announced for him, probably before he wanted to announce, that leaving the Lions. Did not like being third wheel. And will be, I believe, starting probably the main guy in a new team that's starting up next season.
Do we know what the team is or who it is or who's sponsoring?
It's some guy that I'm sure if I was Belgian, I'd know right off the top of my head, but I can't think of it right now. But somebody, they are starting a new team.
So let me ask Bill, who's the second guy?
Don't know.
I know who the first guy is.
Who what?
Well, you said that he doesn't like being the third guy on the Lions.
You know, I don't know. That's a good question, right? I mean, it's Tone. Is it Korna? You know, I mean, I think that there's kind of that power struggle for that second spot in that team. Maybe it's just we don't know. Maybe he's getting the results, but he feels like he's like there are other guys in there, maybe even Lars, who are being treated, giving more attention than he is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And this is, I think, it's something that this team is going to struggle with because they are the Yankees, right? That's what we always say. They're the Yankees, to use that American baseball reference, of cyclocross with all the talent that they have. He's going to be people that, you know, the Sky example of...
And we forget.
Really talented people there. Go ahead.
And we forget 4 or 5 years ago, who left?
That would be Tom Musson.
Nope.
Oh, that was 2 years ago, actually. Who was it 5 years ago?
Wout Van Aert.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just think about that. Think if he hadn't left, what that team would look like.
Yeah.
Or would other guys come to the team? And it's also that sense of it's not a team sport, per se, so it's not like you're being forced to work for somebody else. But certainly,
there definitely would have been
food at the table or whatever, right?
I mean, Tone's definitely the number one. But if you put Wout out there too, that would have been a whole different. But then, you know, you're right, because if that happens, then Aerts probably isn't on the team. So
I doubt they would have signed Lars too.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that was the same time, right? And that was kind of the panic on board that they lost their marquee rider.
Right. Right. It would have been very difficult to predict that Tone was going to, you know, do what he did at that time. They're looking for like the up and coming superstar. And so they went with Lars, and then Tone just has been riding out of his mind. So that's awesome to see. It's still wearing the World Cup jersey, by the way. Yeah. He's still a few points ahead of Wout. So there we go. Vanderpool's actually way down because he didn't come to the U.S. So he got zeros for those two races. So he's actually back a little ways in the World Cup standing. So
one more thing I do want to mention about this, just because it was something that I was hoping was going to develop throughout the year. And it really hasn't in both both aspects of this. One, at the sort of the top end, in that we didn't see the Matthew Vanderpool versus Laurens Zwick rivalry that looked like it might be forming a little bit last year, and that really didn't pan out. And then what I was really hoping for was that we, you know, if we at least didn't get that on the undercard, we would have gotten the David Vanderpool versus Dieter Zwick.
Head to head,
you know, the yeah. other brother.
Right.
But it turns out David Vanderpool having a pretty darn good season.
Yeah.
You know, this is the thing. If little brother's not out there, he's getting top tens. You know, he was seventh in this race, and then Dieter's yeah. down there in like 23rd. So they're not really going head to head. And at the same time, you know, if he keeps this progression, there's an opportunity that there could be two brothers on the top at Worlds.
Sure, that'd be amazing. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Phil, just okay, to our point, we're talking about, sorry, sorry to step on you, but the whole Telenet Fidea Lions thing, if you're looking at world rankings right now, the men's elite cyclocross world rankings, as of right now, you have, of the Lions, Tunaerts clearly ahead of everybody, 2,074 points. Then you go down to six, is Lars Vandahar at 1,273, Quinton Hermans at 1,252.
Sort of answering your question about who's third. Or who's second?
Second. In that case, it's interesting because I think we both started with, you know, is Lars fading? And then actually in eighth place is Cornerbend Kessel in 1224.
Yeah.
There it is. Quite the powerhouse team.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Americans at Zolder in 17th place was Stephen Hyde. Then we had in 43rd place, Curtis White. You guys holler at me if I miss anybody. In 47th was Kerry Werner. 49th, Cody the Kid Kaiser. In 57th, Max Jodelson. And in 64th place, Tyler Cloutier.
Nothing if not consistent.
That's right.
Hey, speaking of consistent, Vandenham, 41st.
Yeah, 44th and 41st. Good for him, man.
There we go. Yeah, good. Tyler told me yesterday that his plan, probably the same as a lot of other people's, was, yeah, when Stibar's starting back with us, so when he goes, I'm going to follow him up. And he's like, and then you realize, yeah, there's a reason why he's a former world champion as you watch him just ride away from you.
He's going places where people are afraid to stick their bars.
Yeah, he's going places where I just ain't going to put my bike. You know, ain't going to happen.
Hyde passing Stibar, I think he put out there on Twitter, was like bucket list. He could check that off.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. So, all right. Well, that wraps up. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about Zolder?
Did we do all the classifications?
I can't remember. Oh, do you want to do the U23 again, Bill?
Sure. Here is your men's.
That can just be your responsibility from now on.
All right. I love it.
That's what you need, is more to do, man. You're just
fifth place. I can get this one because it sounds like it's almost a hockey name, even though it's spelled a little different. I'm going to pronounce it like that. In fifth place from France was Sandy Desjardins.
Desjardins, you're right. That is a hockey name.
In fourth place, Ryan Camp. He sounds like he should be North American. Can we just adopt him? He's Dutch.
Ryan Camp, yeah.
Ryan Camp. Sure. Ryan Camp should be from, like, you know...
Missouri.
He's from Missouri. Timo Kellick in third place. Mike Vanderhaeden in second place. Do you think he's related? Isn't there a woman, Vanderhaeden, about the same age? And then Ellie Easterbeat took the win. So that was...
There we go.
Nice. Gage Hecht, 17th. This was the race that Adam was talking about with Gage, where you look at where Gage was in 17th place with a time of 51.39, and then top 10 was 51.22, and then top 12 was 51.30. So he came in with this big batch of people. So, you know, from ninth place down to 17th was all within reason.
Right.
And let's see.
Juniors.
I can do that.
While you're looking that up, I did talk, Alex, he talked about that race too. He did not have a real good race. I think he was finishing down in the 50s. He said basically, you know, just kind of the tiredness caught up with him, and then he made a stupid mistake and crashed that upset him way back. And then he just kind of, you know, did what he could to finish as high as he could. So,
and then he said he had an ankle problem, if I'm not mistaken. No.
Yeah, where he kind of like hit a nerve in his ankle, you know, where you get just like kind of like a funny bone in your elbow where you hit it and it just for, you know, an hour or so, it's really tingling and maybe even painful to push on. But then it kind of goes away and is gone. He said that kind of happened to his ankle, just the way he hit it. But after a couple hours, it was kind of just went, it was gone, you know, but at the time it was really sensitive to putting pressure on. So yeah, just one of those fluke things. So, All right, Bill, hit us.
All right. Fifth place, your big mover with the number 60 bib moving up to fifth place on the day. Gonzalo Inguanzo Macho.
Man. That's impressive.
Fourth place. I was going to mention this because not, I think, the race that we're expecting from the fourth place finisher, but back near the top, Thibaut Nice in fourth place. So interesting, you know, first year in the juniors for him, 16 years old. In third place, Lewis Askey from GB. Luke Verberg from the Netherlands in second place, and winning was Ryan Cortens, Belgian rider. So definitely, it's kind of interesting. I think it's just horses for courses with the juniors between Nemour and Zolder. Definitely different skill sets on display.
Yes, way different for sure. Yeah.
With that being the case, that says a lot about young Ryan Cortens, the 17-year-old that won both Nemour and Zolder.
I think he's one that I wonder, do we know who he rides for?
I do not, but we can probably figure that out while we're talking.
Maybe a bidding war for him going on.
Maybe a world's pick war going on TV, right? TIE too, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's cool. We did have a race today.
Yes.
The De Veve race. Do we want to talk about that next?
Yeah.
Did you want to do a question? I just want to know if you want to throw in your question, Bill.
The only real question, well, I've got a couple questions. The first question, which I think will be easy, although I did want to go back and do some quick research, but I may have to follow up just to see the actual numbers. But it was a viewer wanting to know why it seems like there are less barriers or planks or hurdles in European races than in the past. And I think that Scott, you made the point when we were talking about this before that it's just because they're not needed. And I think that we fall in North America that we look at planks as being a mainstay of cyclocross. If you're going to have a cyclocross race, you have to put, you know, you have to have your planks.
Right.
That's what everybody practices. So you don't want to, you know, not give them the opportunity. But it's really one of these things that I think a more sophisticated course design, you really look and see what your course needs. And if you have forced dismounts and you have a flow to your course, you want a fast, exciting, dynamic track, then you don't always need it. And I think a lot of times too, the skill sets have changed where there's not as much dismounting for it. So it's not a forced dismount. They're just riding them. And then other promoters want to try to, you know, make sure that everybody can ride it. So they make them even lower and we get like these 30-centimeter barriers. So it's just, I don't think it is an essential part of the sport like it was in years past. And final thought on that, years past when there was not the UCI rule limiting courses to only one set of planks like there is now. In the past, you'd see two and three and triples and everything, and that's all gone. You can only have one set, and then a lot of courses just it doesn't make sense for the design.
And there's enough other places that you're dismounting. You don't need to throw a set of barriers in there. What did you think, Bill?
Think, just to step on that, is not only do you not, you have other things that force you to dismount, but the barriers don't force people to dismount so much anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, in the low and hold race today, and we haven't touched on it yet, but the Helen's Junior Women's race.
Yeah.
How great is that? in general. And there was a young junior woman that was humping the barriers.
Did you see? Did you see lap one?
It too.
Like lap one in traffic.
In traffic.
Oh man.
Yeah.
There and like there was like five or six other women around her, and she's just like, woo, woo,
that was.
Like
I think that was the best move on those planks all day long because she came in there just fearless.
In fact, I didn't even realize. Like I think I saw it on Helen's Instagram feed, and I watched it, and I'm like. It didn't even dawn on me that that's what I was looking at. And then I went, wait a minute. Did she just hop those barriers? So I had to watch it again, spot looking for her. Because it was like so weird to see someone hopping in traffic like that, that much traffic of other riders that were running those. I was just, wow.
And
very,
then,
very
impressive. And then you had Yolanda Neff doing the same thing. I think, I was just joking for her. It's like, why is this a big deal? This is you're on a bike, you ride over stuff. That's kind of what I do for a living.
Right.
I was kind of surprised that she didn't jump over the ditches, I guess is the right word for those things.
I think those are bigger than they look.
Probably. Well, I guess. Yeah. Because I typically think of what we saw at U.S. Nationals last year in Reno, that kind of a ditch, which is very jumpable for someone of her talent, or of everyone's talent.
So my question, Bill... since we're talking about barriers and jumping stuff, what did you think about the placement of the barriers in Louisville at U.S. Nationals?
In theory, I really liked them.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that if we had different conditions in close races, it could have been a pivotal moment. In that, if you come into the end of the race, and for people that aren't familiar, there was a long paved stretch. You made a right turn and then a shorter stretch that had the planks in the middle of it. And then you made a quick left turn and you were pretty much done. I mean, the finishing sprint was really, really short.
So, and the part with the barriers is obviously mud again. So you had long pavement, short mud, and then pavement to the finish, which was a short pavement. So
when I saw that at first, I was like, oh, just think about this. You have, two people coming down there. You have like if it was going to be White and Hyde, or if you had like Ellen Noble and Katie Compton, and the decision was going to be there if it was dry, if it was fast, that they would make that turn, and if you could stay on your bike and ride those and drive out of it without and get and keep that momentum, I think that's a winning move.
I agree completely.
In that little possibility, I was like, oh, this could be really awesome. As it turned out, it was such a mud bog that we had a couple, I think in the men's race, a few people, and in some of the junior races were riding it, but in no way was it an advantage. They were not faster at all. And then once you try to pedal again in that mud, you don't have any momentum, so you're not gaining anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people, the race
that occurred in my mind, looking at that ahead of time, I just see... In particular, the women's race, and I think you're right with Noble and Compton, shoulder to shoulder, coming down that long stretch from under the flyover or under the bridge or wherever it is, just hammering it down there into the right turn after it turned to dirt into those barriers, and how exciting that would have been.
Or Powers and Hyde, or Curtis and Hyde, or Gage and whatever. So no, I think it was a very good. I agree with everything you said, Bill. I think it was a very good placement of it, and David, and I think going into it, we were all like, oh, this could be key, and it just kind of didn't play out, unfortunately, that way. So yeah, but I was interested in what you thought. I thought it was a great placement of barriers. It just kind of didn't play. The races just didn't play out that way, and mostly because of the conditions.
But the thing that was great about that course setup that we learned as the races went on is that where the winning move, we kept calling it the sprint before the sprint before the sprint before the sprint, where the move was taking place kept getting farther and farther back. So it wasn't down the finishing stretch. It wasn't at the planks. It wasn't down that open boulevard. And a lot of times it was on the big climb right before that. And then it started to be on the other climb before that final climb. You know, that became really hard and tricky in some of our earlier races. So that was kind of part of that whole setup that I really liked. I know that, you know, there are people who thought it was not a good setup, and I understand the arguments, but that was the thing that I found exciting, just from a strategy and just analyzing how the Nationals track played out. I thought it was kind of cool how the dynamic part of the course where the moves were made just kept backing up farther and farther.
Yeah. I thought it was a great course, just with great facilities, and I think they did an amazing job. Amazing job. Well done. So, David, did you want to give any thoughts on
the other thing I would add on U.S. Nationals, especially being a race director myself and having seen things go with different venues go belly up, the fact that every cyclocross race is going to do some quote-unquote damage to a beautiful, pristine park. This was to the nth degree in that park. And the fact that the park came out afterwards and was proactive in stepping and trying to get ahead of all of the comments that were sure to come, and saying that this actually was not a terrible thing. It's great, and we really support it, and we had a plan. We're going to work going forward. And even the park said, come June, no one's going to know what happened here.
Right. As they said, we have a warehouse full of grass seed.
You know what? And one thing that Kentucky can do pretty well is grow grass.
And how about the fact, you know, there was an invasive plant species in the park that they were going to have to rip all out of there anyways. And they were like, yeah, now we don't have to do that. Yeah. Right. It's took care of that for us. So, yeah, I agree. A lot of cool things with that, too. So, all right. Well, let's talk about the DeVeve race from today. Just this morning that you guys watched. I unfortunately had to miss. But the women's race, we'll do the top five. We have results on that already. In first place was Lucinda Brand. Second place, Sané Kant. Third place, Denise Betsema. Fourth place, Laura Verdonschot. Fifth place, Lois Sells. Now, I just said Verdonschot was having the knee issue, and then she goes and races today. I swear I saw that.
No, there was actually statements made about that, Scotty D. Comments were made that, yeah, it will hurt, and yeah, it won't. She won't be able to get the performance out of it that she could get otherwise, but she won't be doing further damage by going out and racing. So
there you go.
I think her performance is pretty good. Scotty, do you have the times there as well?
Yeah.
Can you? I just want Scott to read off the times for the top four.
Lucinda Brand 40:02.
That's Sané Kant 40:03. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 40. Yeah. 40. Yeah. 02. Two 100s or two seconds?
No. 2 seconds.
No.
Yeah.
No.
2 seconds.
40 minutes. No. 2 seconds. Yes.
No.
Okay. I'll give it to you. Go. So it was only 40 seconds and 2 100s.
Oh yeah. No. 200. You're right. I'm sorry. Go.
40:03.
Yeah.
For Sané Kant, and for Denise Betsema, and for Laura Verdonschot. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's basically.
It was a sprint finish.
Everybody sprinting right down.
An amazing sprint finish.
So four riders all sprinting.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's, you kind of, depending on how long that sprint finish was, I mean, you'd have to look at Lucinda Brand.
It was long. And so here's the thing. Here, you even have to go back to the junior race, and there was somebody had a, just a, like, Instagram of the, you know, phone video of the finish for the junior race. I don't know if you saw this, Dave. And you look and you go, oh, there were like eight guys sprinting and then like 10 more right behind them. You know, it truly looked like a road race. And you never see this in cyclocross. You know, cyclocross sprints at the beginning, right? So, but this was just a group sprint at the end. And then we had this women's race. It was the exact same thing. I mean, there was this big race going into it, and it set up perfectly. I think it was even Scott Herman was like, yeah, she's just, you know, getting ready for Lucinda Brand, just getting ready for a road season. She actually let it out.
Uh-huh.
But once she hit
and held it the whole way.
Well, but once she hit the pavement, she sat up. But nobody, like Sané Kant, you know, for supposedly not a road racer, although she's done fine. We've seen her, I think, podium for Belgian Nationals on the road. She was not leaving Brands. She was not going to go around, but she was like just stuck on that wheel, second wheel the whole time, just stuck there, just not moving. And then she didn't come around again. And Brand is doing this. Brand looked at her like, David, like 8 times, you know, they made that turn and she's looking back, looking back, looking back, looking back. And then finally was like, screw it. And just like, you know, pounded it and then just held on to it. And it was a good long sprint. And she just held it the whole way. And here's the thing that you may not know this, but body, you know, positioning on cyclocross bikes and how they're set up and how you have to ride in the mud and the dirt and the balance on the bike, and you want more weight shifted backwards, it means that you're going to be in a more upright position. Therefore, you know, when you go into your sprint, it's not necessarily going to be the best position to be on the drops. And some people are going to sprint on the hoods, and that's more advantageous in the sport of cyclocross. Everyone on the drops. All right. Four of them in the drops, taking it home. I mean, it looked like a freaking road race. It was so amazing.
Oh, I have to watch that.
You do need to watch it, Scotty, because I'll tell you, it became kind of obvious that Sana was going to race this one differently. Here she is caught with the road racers at the front end of this race, and those four were playing, you know, cat and mouse for the last lap. And in Sana Khan, when normally you would expect her to kind of really push ahead, sat in. And I honestly think that she was really thinking about this sprint. And she tried really hard to come around Lucinda and almost did pull almost even with her. And then it was a very exciting finish.
Sounds like it. So top Americans, Katie Compton, I bet she was on the drops too. Right.
Yeah. She was on the drops the whole race.
Yeah. She's always on the drops, which is cool to see. She was 10th place. I don't know if I said that. In 15th place, Rebecca Ferringer.
Yeah. Good race
in
for her.
17th place, Sonny Gilbert. 18th place, Courtney McFadden. So we get four American women in the top 20. That's cool to see. Magalie Rochette in 20th place. We're just kind of claiming her. Do you want to?
Yeah, we're doing North American.
Ruby West, also a Canadian rider, in 21st place. So that's good. It's any Canada. Jennifer Jackson in 28th place, also a Canadian rider. Jen Malik in 40th place for the U.S. Is that it for the women? No, we have Dana Gilligan from Canada. I almost said Canada in 41st place. Emily Werner in 44th place for the U.S. Rebecca Gross in 47th place for the U.S. And Corey Coogan-Sissick in 51st place for the U.S. Sydney McGill from Canada in 52nd place.
I think that we should make Lizzie Whitlock's from the Netherlands, an honorary American for this race as well.
Because
she was,
yeah.
You know, I want to know if any conversation happened, because she was basically in the group with Ferringer, Gilbert, McFadden, and then this kid, Whitlock's just sort of stuck between them.
That's cool. Very cool to see. Yeah, it sounds like it was a great race. I know a lot of people said that this women's race was really awesome, so I'm going to have to go back and watch that for sure.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we made reference to it, and it does not show up. I'm looking at the UCI site, so those results do not show up. But this, you know, I think we have to make sure that we mention that this was the first ever junior women's standalone race that took place at a UCI race, not a UCI category, so it's not showing up in the UCI results, but, you know,
right.
Helen Wyman making this a goal, and that start, it was a full-on race. They must have, like, sold out that field because it was packed.
Yeah.
It was exciting racing. It was great to see, and I'm just hoping that this is the spark, and you know, I know we're going to get this as a UCI category down the line, but we've seen also before where the series somehow, if the UCI doesn't say you have to have this race, that they won't have it, even if it's a category, much like, you know, a lot of like the Americans, we don't have the U23 separate races at our World Cup.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this is something that gets adopted. There definitely was a huge turnout for it today, and it was just really, really, really cool to see.
Absolutely. I mean, this just goes to show you, Helen Wyman is just dedicated to this and to women's cycling in general, and I just applaud her for it. It's something we should all support, and I just loved seeing the videos from that. It looked great. You're right, Bill. It was, that field was big. It was huge. Those girls looked ready to race at a very high level. Like, we were just talking about jumping the barriers and stuff. So, yeah, just amazing. Why you would not have this is
beyond me. Yeah, I mean, some of the people who were up at the top of that race, I know Harriet Harden, for one, who got second. I'm sorry, I can't remember who won it. You know, she's somebody we knew from getting a medal in the fourth place U23 last year, but also has been up there. You'll find her name down there in the, you know, top 20, top 30 in these UCI elite races. So that she can go out there and actually contest for a podium is pretty awesome, and that's the way it should
be. In the age category that she's actually in,
right.
You know, it's like, yeah, they should have the right to be able to race in their actual age category. So,
I mean, Mariana Voss is twice her age.
Yeah, exactly. You go from racing kids to racing Mariana Voss with nothing in between just makes no sense. So,
and beyond that, people could say that, okay, well, they're racing at the highest level, but you're learning how to race from behind. You're learning how to get passed, get swamped or whatever. Here you are learning how to race to win.
Right.
And that is
Big difference.
Big difference.
Plus, look at we were just mentioned. Look at the last two women's fields for the elite women at the last two World Cups. They're jammed. There's, you know, there's 80 to 100 riders in them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You gotta have something to build up to that.
And that,
I mean, because it's obviously a popular thing.
And that in itself is unfair.
You're basically just
shoving everyone who doesn't fit because you don't have a category available for them elsewhere into that. Yeah, it's not
right. Here, go to row 11 and do your best. You know,
and it's the type of thing. And one of the things, and I guess we'll chat about a little bit about the article I wrote on the U23 women in general, is that if you look back, you know, especially to world championships, and people kind of forget this, there's only been a U23 women's field for 3 years.
Right. Right.
You know, so there's only been a women's field in Worlds since 2000.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. We tend to forget that, you know, that go look at some of the older world championship races, you know, from the 90s and stuff, and try and find the women's race. Oh, it's not here.
Just to clarify, because I believe I understand your point on this, but just to clarify, the point being that it should have been around longer.
Well, the point
not
being,
like we should
if
be,
you're
we
gonna,
should accept it, or therefore we should just be happy that they get to race at all.
Well, no, I guess my point in, and you're right, I didn't really draw the connection into the what happened with the U.S. U23 selection, where there were a couple spots left open, is that selection throughout is treated as an elite selection as opposed to a development selection. The point I'm trying to make is you have a category that's only 4 years old. It's still a development category, and you still have to fill it out, and you still have to build those ranks. And, you know, one of USA Cycling's priorities, and I understand it was just kind of misguided here, was they didn't want to treat the U23 men and the U23 women differently, where in fact they need to, for a number of reasons. One, because the U23 isn't that old, but two, you also had juniors in there as well, because there's no, so there are definitely these big differences where different treatment was crucial, and they know that they dropped the ball on there. They should have treated it more like a developmental category instead of a elite category. So
yes.
Can we do the men's side on
this?
Yes. Yeah. All right.
Let's do the men's results from today. First place, Matthew Vanderpoel. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Tone Aerts. We should just like record that and loop it.
Mm-hmm.
Every race. Fourth place, Michael Vanternout. Fifth place, Tom Musen getting up there into the top five. I think that's the first time we've mentioned him today, so that's That's cool to see. Anything? How'd that race go, you guys?
Oh, it's the same old, same old, same old. You know, and it's you know, I put the quote out there that I've done before, that people always complain and they want, you know, Vanderpool to stick around and make it a race. And you know, his quote when people were asking him about that, he said, "I get paid to win bike races," and
absolutely
more power to him.
The idea that Matthew Vanderpool should ride slower is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's
because
ridiculous.
It's like what I was talking about earlier. You know, he doesn't do what Sven or Niels used to do. And I think part of that, it wasn't because they were like, you know, worried about the sanctity of the sport. They were like, I can't go off the front and hold this for 60 minutes. Well, this guy can't. The race behind him, all the Belgian crew that was chasing him actually had a race that looked more like the women's race, but of course it's not, you know, as exciting because it's not for the win. It's for second place, but it was, you know, good sprint between, Aerts and Van Aert. Van Aert looking like he's ready to race on the road, basically just came around, Tone with about 50 meters left and was like, yeah, I'm just going to go around you now easily, and took second place. I will say second, third, and fourth when they were sprinting it out, all on the hoods.
Oh, okay. But at least there was racing. This is one of my things with the men's race lately. Has not just been Matthew Vanderpool riding off the front. It's you have a rider 15 seconds, another rider 15 seconds, another rider 15 seconds through almost the entire field. There's no racing going on anywhere.
You could not have a group race in here unless you were Matthew Vanderpool. He was the only outlier throughout the day. Yeah. Everything else was a group race, and it played out like that. You know, this one, they let the breakaway go, and the peloton, as you know, Paul Sherwin say, they did the math wrong and they weren't able to bring him back in by the finish, so you know, they were all sprinting for a second.
right. Americans in this race, in Stephen Hyde was in 20th place, Curtis White in 23rd. I can actually say Americans now if we're going to do all the Canadians, the actual all Americans. Michael Vandenham from Canada in 24th place. You guys holler at me if I miss anything. In 39th place was Max Juddelson. In 40th place, Cameron, is it Jetty? Yes.
Heady? We're going Yeti because that sounds the best.
And in 43rd place, Tyler Cloutier. I know he sounds like he's Canadian, but he is from the United States. So there we go.
Tyler, I have to throw this out there. What a great start he had. I don't know. Did you notice that? Of course, I've always been looking for Tyler now in the starts. But he was right there at the start, right in the middle of the action, managed to stay with the group. Perhaps not the front group, obviously, but stayed with the group for a good part of this, starting to come around a little bit.
Awesome. So, Bill, when I talked to Tyler yesterday, he said he's actually going to be over there and be doing the races after Worlds. He's staying over there.
That's awesome.
That entire time. So we should maybe try and Skype him for a few minutes on one of our shows between now and then.
Yeah,
if we want some on-site intel on what's going on. So,
you know, we talked about it being a road race, so we should actually mention the one guy who's a road racer, although he's a former cyclocross champion, who was out there. Stibar ended up 13th.
Not bad. So, all right. What is there anything else? Did you want to talk about any other results from Launhout?
Nope.
All right.
I'll quickly do it. U23 men, Lander Lukes in fifth place, Thomas Main in fourth place, Loris Rollier in third place, Timo Killick in second place, and Ben Turner. Big Ben First. Turner with the win.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I got.
That's all you want to mention? That's all you got. All right. Well, is there any other topics we wanted to cover on this TDD TIE, gentlemen?
I briefly wanted to touch on if you all haven't seen it on CXERS.com. There was controversy early on, which we talked about a little bit, about the U23 Worlds selection for the women. You get 5 spots if you have the Pan Am winner, which we do, Clara Hansinger. She does not count against your 5. So you actually then get 6 spots. Same thing happened both in the men's and the women's. So we get more spots. So for the U23, there's this whole, hopefully everybody is familiar with how all of the things that you need to do to be able to be eligible to be selected as a, you know, from being an automatic selection to a discretionary selection to having to petition to be even considered for a discretionary selection. But in the end, the selection committee decided that there were only 4 names that were put out in front of them, and they didn't select anybody beyond that. There was Maddie Monroe, who's a 16-year-old, was the only one that did not automatically qualify who was selected. And there was a big outcry, and rightfully so, that these other 2 spots, which there were a lot of U23 women, were not selected. So I talked to Scott Schnitzbahn, who's the vice president of Elite Athletics for USA Cycling. You can read that whole thing. There are a couple things that, just for space, I didn't get in there. And then one thing I'd like to clarify. Start with, and I was going to put it in there, and then I just didn't want to drag it. I understand that this was dude talking to dude about women's cycling. And I understand just right there are problems with that. And I am, from what I am asking and how the conversation is going to go, it's not going to be the same as if I was somebody who is in that position. So I appreciate that. And I am sympathetic towards that position, but I still felt like somebody had to ask the questions, and I had the access to do so. So the second thing that was brought up that I didn't put in there, people have asked this question, is like, why not bring everybody? What's the big deal? And one of the things we didn't really go into is that for Worlds this year, housing is really an issue for all of the federations. Like, and I put this on the UCI, that this isn't in Belgium. This isn't somewhere. This is this remote area in Denmark. There aren't enough hotels for everyone. There aren't enough hotels for the teams, much less spectators or anyone else. The thinking behind this, I'm not really certain, but that is a huge issue. And it was brought up to me as this is one of the reasons we couldn't bring a full team. In my head, I'm thinking, this is not an argument we want to make, because what you've decided to do is just not bring these U23 women. So this isn't helping your cause.
Right.
Because if that was truly it, you should have cut everywhere, not just
everywhere,
here.
So
I didn't put that in there just because I was like, that's going to be the focus point, because that's a horrible argument, because you should have just cut across the board then.
Right.
But they couldn't, because everybody else was automatic qualification. You know, it's like these were the only ones that were cuttable.
Is that true? Because everybody else was auto. So Yeah.
So, but there aren't, you know, they're going to be searching for beds. That's the one thing. But I just want to throw that out, because somebody mentioned that. So that was part of the equation. But again, as I said, that's not a winning argument. That's not a sympathetic argument on any level.
No, for sure.
The other part of this that I think people keep harking back onto that I agree, and I just wanted to flesh out a little more, was the whole phrase medal capable, which is this Olympic style requirement that the Olympics are a whole other ball of wax. And if you medal in the Olympics, that is actually hard currency. The U.S. Olympic Committee gives you money to your sport if you medal. So the stakes for getting a medal in the Olympics are huge. And the U.S. sports that are Olympic sports want to take athletes who can win medals. That's the deal. that's not the deal for Worlds. That's really not where we're at. And yeah. and what I think people, you know, and so what it happened was to qualify to be a discretionary pick, you had to be in the top 150. And there's a huge drop off. Like the people who are going are in the top 100, other than Monroe. Monroe's like 300th, you know, mm-hmm. and that's where the rest of our U23 women are. They're pretty far down there. But
right.
what I don't like is that you say, okay, you have to be 150 and then medal capable or future medal capable. And
my agree.
My problem
especially
with
future medal capable.
Well,
I mean, that,
let me just finish
go
this
ahead,
thought.
Sorry,
I know it's been a long thought, but I promise I'll be done in a second.
No, it's good though. Go
the thing that you don't that is getting lost in this logic chain is that if you automatically qualify, all the people who made the team don't have to go under the medal capable scrutiny.
Right.
So we're not looking at Stephen Hyde. We're not looking at Curtis White, who are going to auto qualify, and saying, are you actually medal capable?
Half the men's field is not.
Right.
For the
so
U.S.
But,
is not
I'm
medal
saying
capable.
Is that we're not even putting that burden on them. I hope
yes.
both of them stand on that podium. How awesome would
Me
that
too.
Be?
Yet, yes.
we're going to say that the only way we'll take these auto qualifiers and we're not going to look at them and say if and even ask if they're medal capable because they're on the team. And then we're going
right.
to say, okay, everybody who is not in the 100 top 150, you have to show us that you're medal capable to be able to be on that team. That's wholly unfair.
I agree.
Yeah, and you have to be better than the people that are on the team.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the point.
How
that
do they qualify with that?
Right, and that's kind of the logic that I don't think I expressed well enough in that article. So that's kind of been on my mind, just trying to explain better yeah. why for cyclocross we need to just get rid of medal capable. Just and
that's
just,
a, that's a really good point,
just
David.
Get rid
it's
of
like
it.
You have to be better than the people who have automatically
exactly.
qualified.
That's my whole point. Right?
Not, it's like that makes no sense at all. None. So, yeah.
The
well,
other thing,
I think
the other
I
thing
completely
is that
agree with you,
the
Bill.
Other last part of this is part of this is on the athletes and part of this is on the teams. And I think that hopefully, since we know about this now in USA Cycling with Jesse Anthony about now being the cyclocross manager, that the information will be more readily available. If you have an athlete that you think is capable of competing at Worlds, you have to be proactive in finding out how to get that rider in the system because it doesn't happen automatically. And I think
yes.
some teams were caught off guard by that and were just hoping, oh, we're going to get this letter in the mail or this phone call saying that we're going to Worlds. And it just doesn't look, it doesn't work like that. You
yeah,
have to
no.
be proactive to be in touch with USA Cycling, say, what do I need to do? Where are the requirements? Where's the petition and make sure that you have dotted your T's and crossed your I's.
Yes. No, that's true. That is very true. And that's where, like you said, some teams with experience, you know, that they know this already. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully that'll become an easier process in
yep.
the future. But I completely agree with your other point too, Bill. That's just nonsense. So.
If I could, I'm just going to make 2 points to this whole thing. One is,
hit us.
Bill, I read it multiple times because there was a lot of stuff in there. And you had a few articles out there. So if you haven't, viewers should go out there and look at Bill's Crosshairs media postings on this. It lines it out really, really well. One of the things that I think that we have here is this big mess, if you will, you know, this big public thing, which is nice to have only in that at least USA Cycling is being honest about things and being open about the selection process and even admitting in some places
you
that
had so many people shouting at their podcast machines when you said that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe it was too late or whatever, right?
But I'm just joking. I was just saying the internet would disagree that they're being honest.
Okay.
I think they are too, but I'm just saying. Continue.
When they admit that we messed up, and maybe they didn't, they're not really admitting that, and that's just the way I'm reading it, but they did.
Yes.
They did mess up. So here we are again.
Yeah, no, and I think they did. I was just being, I think that there is some sincerity in there. I think I understand that they're not going to change things this year, and that's kind of a sticking point for people as well. And I, look forward to moving forward with the process in the future.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. All right, guys. Was there anything else we wanted to cover? We're pushing our 90-minute deadline, so I think that's everything, isn't it? We got more World Cups coming up, more Deveve stuff coming up, and we'll talk about it when it happens. Sound good?
Sounds like a good plan.
Bill, if people want to get in touch with you or follow you or read your great article, how can they do that?
Well, they can find that kind of stuff at cxhairs.com. I also would love for you to follow the Cyclocross television channel on YouTube, which you can get to at youtube.com/cxhairs. And then on social media, I say dumb things at cxhairs on Twitter and Instagram.
Nice. And David, what about you?
I'm just plain old Mr. David Palin on the Instagram and on the Twitter.
The Twitter sphere. And you can find me, Scott Dienbach. I am at BikeShopCX on Twitter and at BikeShopCX on Instagram. And you can listen to David and I on the BikeShopCX podcast, also part of the Wide Angle Podium Network. We should say something about Wide Angle Podium.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice organization. And the new show, The Gravel Lot.
Yep. Gravel Lot, which I think, have we all been on that?
I
have been recorded, but they haven't put it out yet.
Oh, so okay.
It should be coming at some point.
All right. Maybe
this summer, right in the heart of cyclocross season. No, I'm just kidding those guys. And do we want to mention Grim Poor Brothers Coffee? Get over to Grim Poor Brothers.
Yeah, new coffee.
Oh, yes. Tell us about it.
Should I
say it?
Bill,
what's the name?
The name is Hello, Cyclocross Friends.
Yes.
And it's an espresso.
It's an espresso.
And if you go to wideanglepodium.com on the right-hand side, there is a big Grimper Brothers label there, and you can click on it. You can subscribe monthly to their coffee service, or you can just buy pounds of coffee. And if you buy either the full Schleck or the Hello Cyclocross Friends, then we have a partnership with Dan at Grimper, and some of that comes back to the network. So it's an awesome deal where we get a little bit of money, you all get coffee. You can also, the other thing, Scott and David, that you can do there while you're there buying coffee is that you can just become a member of the network itself. And by doing that, you get a lot of great bonus content, but you also get to be a part of what we're building. And it continues to build. You know, we mentioned bringing on the Gravel Lot. We pulled in all of the Cyclocross television videos, so they are being supported by the network as well. And if you like this content and you want to see it continue, we'd love to have you as a member from anywhere as low as like $5 a month. You can put a one-time contribution in there as well, but we'd love to get you as a recurring member. And the sort of the carrot for that is if you do that, then you get cool swag
and bonus content. So there you go.
Hey, I'm just going to throw this out there real quick. Now's the time. Quick now, before it's too late. Dan's running a special on Grimper Brothers Coffee. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but you can, if you sign up for 2 months, you get a 1 month free or something like that. I don't remember the exact numbers, but you're getting bonus coffee if you're signing up now, I think through the end of the year. So you don't have a lot of time, but you get on that before it's too late.
There you go. All right, gentlemen. I think that'll do it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
We don't have a schedule, so we have no idea. But soon, right?
Yes.
Soon indeed. When will then be now?
All right, guys. Later.
Bye.